This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we get to our friend Ray Fittipaldo, who you see if you were watching on our YouTube feed, Ray, who is on the fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. I know we'll keep talking about the Buccos as the show goes on. Austin, somebody I do want to give credit to for how they performed in Game 1, somebody who I got on a lot last season, and I wasn't alone. I thought Ke'Bryan Hayes actually played a pretty nice game.
Yeah,
defensively, Andy had a hit.
I thought he was solid. He had the first hit of the season for the Pirates, so I'll give him credit for that.
And defensively, he helped turn a big double play in the late innings, so I do want to give some credit there where it's due. But now we do chat with our pal Ray Fittipaldo, who is brought to you by the Western Pennsylvania Injury Attorneys Larry Kelly and Joe George from LGKG, your home team. Ray, before we get to football, did you get a chance to watch your Buccos yesterday?
I did, Donnie, and about the eighth and ninth inning, I thought I was watching a replay from last year. Holderman blowing a hold and then Bednar blowing a save. So
yeah, it was very reminiscent of what we were used to seeing in late 2024, Ray. So I don't know. It's game one. I don't want to overreact. They do play a lot of these. But I guess they can't go 162-0 this season, like we all may have hoped. Ray, the latest update on Aaron Rodgers is that the Vikings, as of two nights ago, they're not completely out on this. They said, yeah, they want J.J. McCarthy as their quarterback, but they'll keep that avenue open for Rodgers if something changes. Are we really any closer to this than we were 7 days ago, 14 days ago, even 21 days ago, Ray?
I mean, first off, what a way to build confidence in your young quarterback if you're the Minnesota Vikings. I don't get – I mean, that whole thing I think is holding up this entire process. So I've kind of given up guessing on when Rodgers is going to decide. I guess, you know, like the showman in Rodgers says, well, watch that April 9th date because – that's when the McAfee show is in Pittsburgh. I don't know. Are we really to that point where this is going to be announced on like a television show? So I don't know. I mean, I don't think we're any closer. I mean, if you had to ask me right now, I still think it's going to be Rodgers, but I've just given up trying to guess when it's going to take place.
And this isn't a shot at McAfee and the boys. You know, they're having their big night out on April the 9th. It sold out in, I think, under 30 minutes, which is another credit to them. But if something like that actually happened, Ray, wouldn't that just be an awful look for pro football team?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the LeBron James, the big announcement on ESPN, right? Was that 15 years ago, whenever that was, when he went to Cleveland, or he went from Cleveland
to
Miami. Yeah, so I don't know. You would think if the Steelers had anything to say about that, they would put the kibosh on it, but I don't know that they have anything to say. I mean, listen, if Aaron Rodgers signs with them, I don't think the Steelers are going to stand in his way of doing his weekly appearances on Pat's show. I mean, the Steelers themselves have people who go on Pat's show. So, I don't know. Buckle up. We might be in for some drama here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think that's something that some people have wondered, Ray. How much would they let Rodgers do his typical Aaron Rodgers stuff. Well, I've kind of come around to, if Aaron Rodgers does sign with the Steelers, they're not going to stop anything. I mean, they're already kind of chasing this guy around like he's an elementary school crush, and if he ends up choosing them, they have to put up with his schedule and whatever he likes to do, as odd as some of it may be.
Well, I mean, he does it on Tuesdays on his day off. And honestly, if you're Mike Tomlin, Donnie, could it be any worse than having Ben Roethlisberger do his show like at 11 on your station and then have Mike have to follow him and like answer questions in his press conference about what Ben said? So I think Mike sort of probably views it as, hey, I've been through this before. I'm sure I can handle it if it's Aaron Rodgers this time.
Now, what about when it comes down to things like OTAs and mandatory mini camp, and even when it gets to training camp? If Rodgers wants to hang out in Egypt like he did last season with the Jets instead of being at mandatory mini camp, are the Steelers going to bow down to that? I think that's another question that people have.
I think there's, you know, probably a professional courtesy there. I don't know the details of why Rodgers went to Egypt last year. I'm assuming that was pre-scheduled, you know, before he knew he was going to be a Jet. Or, you know, maybe there was a mix-up in the schedules. I don't exactly know what happened there. But from a professional courtesy standpoint, if you have other obligations travel-wise, I would assume you would do it in OTAs and you would be there for the mandatory part. Because I think Aaron knows, and the Steelers certainly know, that an absence like that would cause some ripples and some waves. I mean, we went through it last year. You know, Cam Hayward didn't show up for, I think, the first or second OTA, and people thought it was the end of the world. Then he showed up, and, you know, he was a captain, and he did what he had to do. So I'm not even saying Aaron Rodgers would be a captain, but as the quarterback of a football team, I think being there for the mandatory stuff is, you know, that should be expected.
After the season, Ray, we heard Art Rooney, too, talk about how he wanted to have one of the two quarterbacks from last season back, whether it be Justin Fields or Russell Wilson, and that didn't happen. How do you think that all played out? Do you think it truly was their plan to have one of those two guys back, and did the conversation ever waver after Rooney came out and said that to say, well, do we want either of these two guys back, and they had more of a conversation about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously we know Fields was their number one choice. And then after he went to the Jets, I think everything just became, okay, let's reevaluate this. Can Russell Wilson get along and be productive within the structure that we have here? Okay. Should we go after Aaron Rodgers? Aaron Rodgers was just released. So I think those conversations take place after Justin Fields is no longer an option. And really, Donnie, it's going to make for some really interesting Q&As down there at the owners' meetings in a couple of days. I think Mike is meeting with the local media on Saturday, and I think Omar, and then I assume Art also will have an opportunity to speak, I think, either, you know, Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday. Those meetings go on for 3 or 4 days. So, you know, we'll see what those guys have to say. But, yeah, obviously – something changed there from late January until that second week of March when Rodgers became available.
When did the Aaron Rodgers thing start to become a reality or a possibility for you? Like, just your inkling as somebody who covers the team or is a fan of the team, whatever it may be in that case. But in your case, you've been covering them for years now. For me, when they made that trade for DK Metcalf, part of me felt they might have an interest in Aaron Rodgers now more than they did 5 minutes ago. So, like, when was it for you that it flipped, that thought Aaron Rodgers, Steelers quarterback, was a real possibility?
I think probably a few days before the legal tampering period, when the deal with Justin wasn't going to get done before, you know, noon on that Monday, you start thinking, okay, is he really going to go to the Jets? And then I think, you know, around that time, I thought it was really going to be, you know, a point of discussion. You know, just being around that team all year, knowing the stories that were reported, you know, with Russell's relationships, not necessarily among the players. I think that was very solid, but just working, you know, game planning. Here's what I want to do. This is what you want to do. We're not really on the same page. You know, at that point when Justin left, it was like, okay, can we really do this again with Russell when we kind of know what it was? And then I think, you know, Darnold became in play for a day, and then Rodgers, and here we are now, what, three and a half weeks later, and, you know, we're still kind of in the same boat.
Talking to Ray Fittipaldo, he covers the Steelers for the Post-Gazette. It is 11:16 right now. Time to make that call to the Buell Insurance Agency. Get help with those premiums at 724-443-5610. Ray, you put out your recent full seven-round Steelers mock draft earlier, and I got to say I am all in on the guy you had at 21st overall. I think that would be maybe not like a dream scenario, but that's probably the top name for me that the Steelers could call at this point at 21.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that all the national media is on the quarterback and all the local media, it seems, are still, they're going to pick D-line. I don't know who's going to be right. You know, Donnie, until they have a quarterback signed, I suppose a quarterback could be in play, you know, anywhere, even including 21. But I think back to that playoff game in January, how they were embarrassed, and just knowing how Omar and Andy want to build this football team. They've addressed offensive line in their first two drafts, and now I think it's time for the defensive line to be addressed too. So we'll see how it unfolds. They got a lot of needs. You know, running back is a need. You know, receivers may be on the back burner a little bit since the Metcalf trade. But I went D-line in my first three mock drafts. I got one more. I'm going to write that one as soon as the top 30 visits are over. And nothing has changed my mind since January that's going to be a D-lineman.
Yeah, Kenneth Grant being that player at 21st overall, the defensive lineman from Michigan. Now, some people a little bit alarmed, Ray, because the Steelers did not have a huge presence at Kenneth Grant's pro day because they had that meeting with Aaron Rodgers last week. So how much do you hold that into account, more so the idea of if they bring Kenneth Grant in for one of those official visits? I think that's a lot more serious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, if he comes in for a top 30 visit, then you'll know that, you know, he's definitely someone that they're seriously thinking about. I don't know this. I know Mike and Omar had to stay back, but I'm assuming the Steelers had some people at Michigan's pro day. So it's not like they ignored that totally. And so just watch those visits. You know, I think they've done 8 or 10 so far. You know, it's pretty evenly divided between D linemen, running backs, receivers, and quarterbacks right now. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. They got about 20, 22 more. So those will be very telling in the process about, you know, who they might be drafting here in another month or so.
I was told that it might have been Terrell Austin that was at Michigan's pro day. I mean, he wouldn't really have to be there for the meeting with Aaron Rodgers, so I guess that would make some sense. And that's certainly a big wig in the Steelers headquarters.
And listen, they could have gone – I don't know if they did this or not, but they could have gone the night before – wined and dined those guys and just flew back whenever they found out they had to meet with Rodgers too. So it's not like they were totally ignoring Michigan's pro day. That's a staple on their pro day tour, just like Ohio State, Notre Dame, and, you know, all the other big ones too.
They were at another big one the other day, Ohio State's pro day. Now, you don't have any Ohio State players being selected by the Steelers, but it did seem like they had their eyes on quite a few prospects from the Buckeyes, which is a program that just spits out pro players every single season.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the two running backs, I think if they still had a second round pick, Donnie, I think Henderson and Judkins, you'd be talking a lot more about them. There's no way Henderson is going to be there in round three. Now, Judkins, you know, he ran so well at the combine. I have a hard time believing he'd be there at 83 too. So, you know, dealing that second-round pick to Metcalf really does take a lot of guys out of play. Like, In my second mock draft, I had them taking Alfred Collins, another D tackle. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of guys like in that 30 to 60 or 75 range who, you know, the Steelers aren't going to be in play for now unless they trade back in. So that's the tough part about doing this particular mock draft. We'll see if they make a deal before draft day to get another pick back. But it's harder to help to fill those holes knowing that they dealt away two picks to acquire DK Metcalf.
Do you think they want to work their way back into the second round?
I mean, at the right price. I mean, you're not going to give away George Pickens for, you know, what you don't think he's worth. I mean, that would be silly. But yeah, I think if there's an opportunity there for them to recoup a pick, I think they would definitely think long and hard about it.
If a team offers them a pick in the 50s, whether it's the low 50s or the upper 50s, do you think they would take that? If let's say it's draft night. Let's say it is night two of the draft and a team says, you know what, we will trade the, I don't even know like what team is picking at the 54th overall pick. We'll trade that for George Pickens.
Yeah, I don't know what they're thinking on that. If you're asking me my personal opinion, I would do that in a heartbeat. And listen, they've never been afraid to trade receivers before. So just knowing their history there, I would not discount that possibility happening on draft day.
Now, the other thing with DK Metcalf's contract, it's not quite what we heard or was reported right off the bat. Like, the contract is a little bit wonky to where it's really only 2 years, I believe, in Pittsburgh where they can kind of get out of it after that, or, like, all of the guarantees are out the window after that. It's not what we were told, a five-year deal for Metcalf when that trade first got reported.
Yeah, but they did guarantee him a lot of money. I think that's, you know, usually they would just guarantee the first year. Just the way the business is going now, Donnie, you almost have to acquire and sign guys like that. You know, they sort of did that with TJ Watt a few years ago for the first time. Now they're doing it with DK Metcalf. It's just a sign of the time. So they are guaranteeing him more money. I forget what the cap hit would be if they had to walk away from that after just 2 years, but it would be quite significant, Donnie. So I think the Steelers plan on DK being around for a while. Yeah, there's that out after year two, but I think they would be penalized pretty heavily there, I think, in terms of a dead cap hit if they did decide to get rid of him after the second year.
You do have them taking a wide receiver late in the draft, so not really somebody that would come in here and make an immediate impact. How do you think they feel about their receiver room right this minute?
Well, I mean, right now with George and DK on the outside, you know, you would hope Calvin Austin can be a solid four. Roman Wilson, you know, takes that step, become a four or a five. They really don't have a true three, if you ask me. Maybe Calvin Austin can step into that role. I don't really view him that way. I think he's a solid player, but I don't know whether his long-term upside is going to be as a strong number three. So there's still a little bit light there. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of starters and quality targets on the outside, I think it's one of the top rooms in the AFC now when you talk about talent. Now we need George to pick it up and, you know, kind of play every week and play to his potential. If that happens, they're going to be more than solid.
Should we have any sort of expectation of Roman Wilson being a real contributor?
I mean, you would hope so. You know, just going back to last year's pre-draft process, Mike Tomlin spent a lot of time with him at the Senior Bowl. He came in here for a visit. They liked him. You know, he got hurt early, never really recovered, got hurt again. So maybe you give him a pass there. But, yeah, you certainly expect him to take another step. And he's not a young guy. I mean, I think he stayed for, you know, 4 years at Michigan. And, you know, he's mature, and I think he's going to have an opportunity to, you know, prove that the Steelers are right in selecting him in the third round.
You also have the Steelers, and you've done this a couple of times in your mocks leading up to the 25 draft. You have them doubling up again at defensive line in this one. Kenneth Grant was the 21st overall pick, and then C.J. West, the defensive lineman from Indiana, in the fifth round. Should we pretty much expect that? We've heard so much about how deep the defensive line group is, and the Steelers certainly hurting at that position on the field. We've also seen a tendency from Omar Khan, Andy Weidel on draft weekend to double up at a particular position. They've done it in their first two drafts. Should we pretty much expect that defensive line will be addressed not once but twice?
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know if you want to say expect. I mean, Donnie, their moves in free agency with D linemen were so minor. I mean, Equale started some games last year for the Patriots, but that was the first time he's ever started games in the NFL. I think he's 30, 31 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They made another minor signing. I mean, no one's cheering that they re-signed Loudermilk. We don't know what's going to happen with Leal. You know, he's coming off an injury. So, yeah, I think everything points to them probably selecting two. But again, when you trade draft picks the way they did to get Metcalf, you know, you do have other needs. So, if they had eight picks, I would say, yeah, double down definitely. But now that you have fewer, it's less of a possibility, but I still went with it in this mock.
Seems like Isaiah Loudermilk and James Pierre, those guys have more lives than a cat, Ray. Like, they are just on the Steelers roster at some point every season.
What about Daniel McCullers? Didn't McCullers come back like 6 or 7 years? He kept signing.
Yeah, he hung around for a while.
Yeah,
man, that was a massive body that didn't pan out. That dude was a monster, like his frame.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, Loudermilk, I understood the pick. He's got the frame. He hasn't developed yet. Bring him back for one more year. I don't think his spot on the roster is secure. I mean, the Pierre thing, I don't think they view him as a guy that's going to play a lot in their defense, but he's a really good gunner, and you do need special teams players. So I think, you know, they like him in that role, and I think that's the reason that he's back.
83rd overall pick, Ray. You have the Steelers taking a quarterback, Tyler Shuck out of Louisville. His stock has been rising a bit. Now, he's an older player. He's already, 24 or 25 years old. He's not quite Brandon Whedon, but he's close enough to it. Do you think he is like the leader in the clubhouse, though, for that middle tier of quarterback in this draft? Or how do you view how those guys kind of hash out?
No, I think the Steelers are doing their homework on a lot of those guys. And I think they're probably going to let some things, you know, fall. I don't think they're going to reach for a quarterback. But, I mean, let's face it. They had to trade up to get Mason Rudolph in the third round. So quarterbacks come up draft boards all the time. You know, people say, wait to the fourth round. Donnie, that would be ideal. But a lot of times, it's the most important position on a football team. And these guys get pushed up. And in terms of the age, I'm not concerned about the age as much as I am about the injuries. The injuries are a real concern. You bounced around a bunch of colleges because of that. So that's a real thing. And you do have to get comfortable with that. I'm sure when he came in, you know, the doctors gave him once over and, you know, checked him out. But to me, the age for a quarterback, I mean, those guys play, you know, 12, 15 years if you're any good. The injuries are, you know, what would concern me.
Limits, do you care if I ask Ray a few free association questions?
Donnie, I would love you to.
I won't really be quite to the Starkey level, Ray. Don't worry. Percentage chance as of right now, Aaron Rodgers is the Steelers' week one starting quarterback.
Man, I think I said 60 last week. I'll still stick with 60, but who knows?
Will the Steelers go back on that if Aaron Rodgers requests to wear number 12?
They won't give him 12.
What if he wants number 0?
Are quarterbacks allowed to wear 0?
I actually don't know the rule. They're allowed to wear 1, and I know that they are afraid to give that number out. I guess they just have a favor to pay to Gary Anderson.
When I was a kid, there was a guy by the name of Jim Otto who was double 0. He was center.
One of the all-time greats.
Kenny Burrows was a receiver for the Houston Oilers, also double 0. You don't see too many of that.
So what if, and it does sound ridiculous me saying it, And I don't think Rodgers will do it, but, I mean, you can't put anything past the guy. What if he said, I will only sign here if you let me wear one of your restricted numbers, 0, 1, or 12? Do you think they'd actually tell him to get lost?
No, I mean, who cares about 0 or 1? I mean, give him that. But to me, if you're going to give him 12, you would have to, like, get Bradshaw involved, see if it would be okay with him. Like, that's like 32, 12, 58.
They got a lot of they have a lot of unofficial retired numbers.
Those are special numbers, and
they gave Pouncey's number to a guy that couldn't even play center right away.
I know, but I don't know, Donnie. I mean, I'm 52 years old, and I got a sweet spot for those guys from the 70s. Don't give away 12, 32, 58. Those are special numbers.
He's going to hash out number 8 between Kenny Pickett, Tommy Maddox, and Corliss Waitman.
Yeah, I think we're okay with number 8.
Thank you, Ray.
All right, Donnie. I'll talk to you next week.
There we go. Ray Fittipaldo. Check out his stuff at the Post-Gazette. A good 7-round mock from Ray. I didn't give away every single pick, but some of them I am certainly a fan of. Kenneth Grant, 21st overall, would be enticing to me. 412-928-9370. Get back to some of your Pirates calls here. I still see a few folks on the line. You can also hit us up on the fan text line at 412-928-9370. That's brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Let's get back out to some of those calls here. Steve is in Moon and wants to talk Buccos. What's up, Steve?
Yes, how you guys doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Good. What do you got?
Good. So with Derek Shelton, I just wondering, you know, when he's going to take accountability for pretty much anything. They just got out of spring training, and to have a half dozen either errors or defensive miscues is unacceptable. I mean, what were the guys doing down there at the beach and watching movies all day? I mean, this is where you're supposed to hash out all the little kinks, and I know you guys talked about Cruz and Rodriguez, but even Joey Bart, the two pass balls, Felter with his miscues. I mean, this is the kind of stuff you got to iron out at spring training so it just doesn't happen. So I don't know. I mean, you guys have touched on a lot of that, but I don't think Shelton, he just basically, all right, guys, it's all right, we'll get him next time, you know, type of attitude, and just doesn't take ownership or accountability for anything. So.
Yeah, Steven, some of the other stuff that I've seen is, well, would you rather have the Pirates work out the kinks now and be running on all defensive cylinders by the middle of the season? Well, yeah, sure, I would, but here's the problem with that. I have my doubts that if they do try to work out the kinks now, they will still be trying to work out those same ones midway through the season. Like, it's not a guarantee to me that their defense will get that much better. That's what's sad. Because over the course of season by season under this regime, it's not really giving me confidence that the Pirates defense will be that much better midway through the season because it's not good right now. Gary is in the North Hills. What's going on, Gary?
Hi, Donnie. Happy Friday. Hey, I've been hearing all the chatter about the Pirates today. We watched the game last night, and you know, I'm not trying to excuse some of the sloppy play. Absolutely not. But one thing I haven't heard is that, you know, the bottom of the eighth inning here, there were two guys on, two outs. It was a 3-2 count, and a pitch that was clearly, not on the borderline, was clearly a strike. I called a ball. We get that call, inning's over, the number of pitches in the eighth inning are cut down dramatically, and we head into the top of the ninth up two runs. That pivotal point, I think these guys battled, and again, I'm not discounting the sloppy play, but I just want to make sure we give them credit for what they did do, and I think some of this was out of their hands, and I think we got a bad call, and it really turned the game for us in a bad way.
Yeah, Gary, I know that exact pitch you're talking about. It was, I think, 1-2 count. Holderman on the mound in the eighth inning. There were two outs, and the pitch was right there. I mean, it wasn't quite right down the middle, but it was certainly in the strike zone, and it was missed. That's where I think maybe you get those robo-umps into play here. You can still have the human body behind a home plate, but a robo-ump would not miss that call. And like Gary said, the Pirates would go into the ninth inning with a two-run lead instead of a tie game, and that could be a whole lot different. Thank you, Pittsburgh. Your amazing generosity during our 2025 Giant Eagle Feed the Need Radiothon. With your help, we were able to provide 258,375 meals to our neighbors in need through the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. A special thanks to our partners, Rome Monument, Hampton Beer Outlet, Memorial Highway Chevy, Greater Pittsburgh Auto Dealers, Aetna, Isley's, and Beano's. That always is a huge day here at the station for all of our Odyssey Pittsburgh stations. It can be a stressful day for guys like us, Austin. You know, with you producing this show, me producing in the afternoon, Harry Callis producing in the morning. It can be stressful for us because we are trying to line up that day to be loaded.
Oh, yeah.
With guests, either athletes, current and former, people from the food bank, people that give back, but it always ends up working out in the end. We put together, I feel, some pretty loaded shows all across the board.
We did, and I know Joe and I were very proud of it, and we discussed it a lot afterwards because, you know, we had a guest every segment, and we ended up bringing Kenny Reggett in as well.
Yeah, that was a big one.
That was awesome from Bar 31. So, you know, it really is a day to be able to give back, and we talk about how Pittsburgh is really like a big city, small town vibe to it, you know, like it's really not that big of a city, you know, all things considered. It's seemingly so many people know each other from regardless of where it is. So it is really good to see every single time they're able to do something like this, the response from the people in the city that give back.
One of the other small towns in this state, not necessarily in Pittsburgh, it's quite a drive away. That is Loretto, and that is where St. Francis University is located. And they made some news earlier this week, making the move from Division I to Division III. The NCAA tournament, two games against Waynesburg and Teal and Grove City within a few years. That is the reality that teams and players and coaches are facing at St. Francis. And that's no knock against those D3 schools I mentioned. Listen, I love the President's Athletic Conference. Austin and I cover a lot of games in that conference. We attended one of those schools that I mentioned. But that is just to paint a picture for you of how the change is going. St. Francis basketball played a game against Maryland this season. Maryland played in the Sweet 16 last night. And in a few years, they will be playing a game against Geneva. It's a pretty drastic change for a program and at multiple programs, every single sport, every single coach and athlete, the sports info department, the funding, all of it, a huge, massive change. Rob Krimmel resigned as the head coach of St. Francis basketball yesterday. You can't blame the guy at all. You can't blame a single player, a single athlete for either transferring or decommitting, because that is a massive change that just took place. Not only did they drop from Division I, they didn't just drop to Division II, which I know people wondered if that would be, you know, why couldn't that be the change? They dropped down completely. And I did find it interesting. We had Rob Krimmel on last week before St. Francis played in that first four matchup, which has ended up being one of the most entertaining games of the entire NCAA tournament, and it was the very first game in Dayton. And the guys brought up to him competing at the Division I level, NIL, budget, things of that nature, and he said, we don't have an NIL budget. Not at all. there are $0 in our NIL budget. And that makes things difficult nowadays in college athletics. If you are a Division I program, if you do not have a dime in the name, image, and likeness budget. So we're going to see a mass exodus, I would think, where you see almost every single coach, player, staff member, maybe even that sports info staff I mentioned. You have to anticipate a school like that thinking a lot of us or a lot of them are going to be out of here. And you can't really blame a single one of them for it because of how massive of a change this is. Given the landscape of college athletics, it feels like St. Francis will pretty much have to build things from the ground up. Maybe not entirely, but close. On the other hand, this is a huge get for the President's Athletic Conference. And Austin, we call games for the conference. You and I have done some games on TV locally. I do a lot of games for the conference's main network. I've called St. Vincent football games for almost a decade now, going on year 8 of calling St. Vincent football games. So I'm going to praise the work done by the PAC, Joe Onderko, and he was on with you the other night. And I'm not even sure how all of this came to be or what all was done, but you talked to him the other night. So how did he sort of paint the picture of everything happening with St. Francis?
Well, I'll let you hear it, Donnie, and then I'll expound upon it a little bit. This was the PAC Commissioner, Joe Onderko.
I was approached in probably early October, I would say, by a consultant that deals with a lot of Division I schools. And in fact, it was confidential enough. They didn't even want to let me know who they were representing, first of all. So we kind of established some ground rules on how we were going to deal with this. And then basically they introduced the folks at St. Francis to us, which brought about some discussions. We gathered information. And then they came and presented at our PAC President's Council meeting in December at the Duquesne Club. After that and a lot of discussion, our presidents voted unanimously to bring them in. And then it was just a question of when and how do you best announce this? And is the one thing you've seen is, this is such an emotional topic for so many people on both sides of it. There really is no perfect time to do it. But I think they felt like they needed to find time that had the least disruption possible. And so rather than doing it, say, in January, which would have been right in the middle of basketball season, I decided to wait until now. And I think looking back on it, when you look at the run, the incredible run that the Red Flash men's basketball program had, winning the NEC and going to March Madness for the first time since 1991, that was absolutely the correct call on their part to go forward with the announcement now.
Man, so Joey O kept this under his cap a little bit.
How about that? And I've interviewed him from October on once or twice and wasn't tipped off at all. And I asked the question, are you thinking about adding anybody? Is it possible? And I did not hear anything. This was a shocker to me. And I talked to a lot of people around the conference. Radio silence. Not even like, hey, this might be happening. Hey, like just like a little nod towards Loretto or anything. No idea that this was coming down. So they did a really good job of hiding this secret.
I called the PAC Women's Basketball Championship game less than a month ago. It was March 1st. It was the first Saturday of March, and I interviewed Joe at halftime, and that's just always kind of a question I throw in there of, hey, any sort of expansion news, whatever, because we do know that they are notably losing, at least in football, Carnegie Mellon,
right,
which was a big loss for them. But just kind of flew under the radar there. So, I mean, credit to Joe, not coming out until the time that they wanted the announcement to take place. I'm not saying that he should have told us that this was happening. I still think it is a very good get for the conference. But, man, to have this under hat for 2 to 3 months really.
And then since October, they were talked about this in October.
Yeah, and I guess it wasn't proposed to them officially until December.
Right, when they officially voted on it.
So to have that under wraps for that long, and then the basketball team to go on the run they did, man, that would have made things really interesting to see how the reaction, I think, would have been if that gets announced in January as just part of, hey, it's 2025, this is a change that will be taking place, we will play out the rest of the season with our Division I programs. Like, say if that happens, and then St. Francis goes on that run.
They don't win the NEC. It doesn't happen in my mind.
Because you think the players probably check out.
I think partially, yes. I don't think that the run would happen. So, like, I understand it from that perspective. I'm sure that they thought, hey.
Because, like, it could have been a storybook ending of sorts.
Right.
Like, hey, this is our last go-around at D1, and they end up making the big dance.
So they will have one more year. Next year will be the final go-around. But this year, I guess, really kind of is it. I think the timing kind of is. It's good from that perspective for basketball. It's also awful because it's the end of March, the middle of the end of March. Think about the freshmen that are incoming to St. Francis that maybe have shut down their recruitment. So many of their students are athletes. And I heard that there basically is going to be like a max exodus.
Oh, there would have to be.
People just getting up and leaving and getting out of there. Especially with all the people in administration and coaches that are already departing. Like, this is going to get a lot worse for St. Francis before it'll get at all better. It's going to be bad for them, I think. So incoming freshmen and people who only have like 1 year, for those that have like 1 year of eligibility left and want to play 1 year of D1, fine. Okay, you can maybe stick it out for one more year, especially if you're a senior getting your degree.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just incoming, you shut it down, you really wanted to go there, your dream was to play Division I, it takes another Division I team away from this area too. And I know that it's lower level D1. You're talking about a low major, not even a mid-major.
Yeah. Still D1.
Still D1. And that means something to people. It means something to athletes to say that you played Division I. It means something with scholarships as well. Going from D1, and people say, well, why didn't they just drop the D2? This is all about money. It's all about financing. And, I mean, maybe St. Francis is struggling more than we realize. They have a lot of really good facilities. Nobody will deny that. Their facilities are really good. But dropping down to D3 takes all the scholarship money out of it. And I feel like there is a lot more to this story that we frankly just do not know yet.
Yeah, I mean, we're really not privy to know what could be the bigger underlying issues. But yeah, I mean, I would expect next season that they will have some D1 athletes on those teams, but they will have more athletes of like my caliber than they will D1 caliber. You know, they're going to have D3 athletes on their teams because they're going to make that transition. Like, okay, then they'll fit in more with the Teal and the Bethany and the Waynesburgs of the world, more so than they're going to fit in with anybody in the NEC and teams in Division I.
And the other crazy thing about this to me is that at least in basketball, in 2020, when I was a freshman at RMU, St. Francis and RMU played in the NEC championship game. RMU beat them, went on to the tournament that ended up being the tournament that was not. We're talking 5 years later. Robert Morris has moved on to the Horizon League.
Yep.
They win their conference. The football team is getting there. The women's basketball team is really starting to find its stride again under a new head coach. Hockey is back. Look at the growth that RMU has made over the last 5 years in that same conference 5 years ago with St. Francis, taking Alabama all the way down to the ropes compared to St. Francis in the tournament, almost won a game, and now, boom, it's all gone. That's just the, I don't know if it's the right word, but the futility maybe is the right word. It's just the way that college sports can change and dictate in just a five-year run where one school looks like it's on the rise and in a mid-major and another in that same conference 5 years ago in the same championship game, it seems like it's falling apart.
Imagine being on campus, too, when that news came out, whether you were an athlete or not. I mean, we went to schools that were a similar size to St. Francis, a little bit smaller.
Yeah, probably by about 800 kids or so.
Yeah, but maybe not even that much. Like, maybe not even as drastic as what you just said, where, you know, we went to a school that had, what, like 1,400 undergrad?
Yeah, I looked it up, but it's right around 1,300, 1,400.
And St. Francis, you said, has how many undergrad? Like
about 1,900.
Okay, so right around 2,000. So, yeah, like 500, 600 student difference. Like, that rocks a small campus.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
Rocks a community.
Like, you're checking everything to make sure this is actually legit. Like, I had a friend text me before I see thing at first, and he said, St. Francis is going to the PAC. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, St. Francis that just made the tournament, they're gonna play in the President's Athletic Conference. They're going to be playing W&J and Waynesburg and Teal. And
they're going to Franciscan and to Geneva.
Hiram now in the conference. Yeah. They're like, yeah, they're going to the PAC.
They're driving all the way up to our friends at Allegheny.
Yeah, sure enough, I start to see all the tweets. I see St. Francis Athletics tweeted out. We see the PAC tweeted out. We see, like, major college outlets tweeting it out.
Yeah, John Rothstein was throwing it out there. Nicole Arbach was throwing it out there.
It also makes me wonder that they won't be the first, or that they will be the first one, but they won't be the only one.
No doubt about it.
And
that
does this.
Ondurko mentioned, I can't exactly remember the team or the school, that about 5 years ago this happened for a school in the Northeast, like right around the New York, New Jersey area. A similar thing happened where they were D1 to D3. So there is, like, and the thought was for Ondurko, like, is this the start of it? St. Francis, I truly believe that this will be the beginning. Just because of where everything is with NIL, transfer portal. Like, look at RMU. Like, I'm going to put this in the breakdown, but RMU's, like, entire starting five is gone.
Gone. Pillaged.
How ridiculous is this for college sports? And, I mean, might as well just say it now. Like, the top of the top, like the Alabamas of the world, the Tennessees of the world, the Michigan States of the world, the North Carolinas, the Dukes, they get to benefit so significantly by this NIL transfer portal, all the above thing. And, you know, the national media will tell you, oh, well, that is all that people care about. That's all that matters, you know, our blue bloods and the best of the best. But if you're talking small town America, the people that, you know, we don't want to be truly forgotten, that sometimes get forgotten in a national perspective, like what's going on in Loretto, what could happen at other schools if D1 programs fold and have to move down to, maybe it's not D2, but it's the D3, those are the real problems that ensue. And what we always wondered, what's that bomb that's going to drop that ends up being the huge downside of this? We're seeing it now with St. Francis.